You're listening to Noel Debien on Sunday nights.
On ABC Radio and on your pod around Australia. You're here with me, Noel Debien, and it's time for Signpost. And joining us now is Tom Roberts from National Catholic Reporter, Editor-at-Large. Tom, welcome back to the program.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Tom, the US presidential debate, we sort of have to start there, don't we, really?
Well, we do. And on the purely political level, the surprise, of course, was how well Romney did. And I was talking to some people in Washington, D.C. today who were very close to the Obama administration and one person who's an ardent supporter. And their question was, where was he? It was an interesting performance. He was very, very low key. And as more than one commentator has remarked, just didn't seem to want to be there and really unusually off his game.
I noticed as I was going through the report on E.J. Dionne talking about the divided political heart in the U.S. and the whole issue between individualism and communitarian instincts, and the whole debate behind the debate, of course, between Romney and the president is Romney's remarks on 47% of people just wanting to live on the dole and not pay taxes. You know, people sucking on the public teat, I suppose.
Well, yeah, and I think that 47%, that comment, is going to continue to resonate because what has been very, very easy to show is that the 47% includes, you know, military, includes people who are retired. It includes people who pay a lot of other taxes, just don't make enough money to pay income tax. It just really, really resonated, and a lot of those people are Republicans. So it was a remark made in circumstances where he thought he wasn't being recorded or anybody was taking notes, and it was, I think, just a very damaging thing because it's not just one line of a clip. It's a major chunk of paragraphs from a presentation he was giving very wealthy donors. Interesting that you mentioned E.J. Dionne because I recently did a long interview with him that will be in, I guess, NCR's next issue about The Divided Heart, the book that he just did, which I think is really a superb analysis and historical look at how we got to where we are and also where he sees this going. And what he says basically is that there are two primary characteristics, I guess, to the American character, two strains of the American character that have been present since the beginning, and that is a very strong individualistic disposition and also a very communitarian disposition. And those things have always been in tension. What he's contending today is that they are so far out of whack and they're out of balance in a way that is extraordinary in the direction of this rugged individualism and this me first and really disregard for any notion of the common good. And I think that what is interesting, and this, you know, obviously he didn't know what was going to happen before the primaries, but the candidates, the two tickets set up almost as an endorsement of how insightful he was. On the one hand, you have Romney, who comes out of this very wealthy background and business mentality, and you have the communitarian, the community organizer, Obama, who came up from very, very different circumstances. He was, you know, raised by a single mom and then grandparents. He came out of modest to poor circumstances and came through the best of American institutions because he had a lot of help.
And who surprised many Australians by actually getting health care up.
Well, that was an enormous accomplishment, particularly against the odds. I mean, he had a Congress that just did not want to move on that. You know, every president, I think, since Truman, including Nixon, really wanted a universal health care. The irony in all of this, of course, is that the model of health care that he used was the model established in Massachusetts by then-Governor Romney. So it's a strange
political irony.
Romney is, well, it's backing away from it. Yeah, it's a very, very odd year. The other parts of the vice president's spots reflect that division as well. You have Paul Ryan, who has given speeches previously talking about his devotion to Ayn Rand, an extreme individualist, an atheist, a pro-choice, all the rest of it, and yet he's being hailed by bishops as sort of the ideal Catholic candidate because he is anti-abortion.
At the same time, Ryan, as vice presidential candidate, has been critiqued just recently by Gerald J. Beyer in America magazine, the Jesuit magazine, who argues that contrary to his imagination, the current Pope has not yet embraced modern-day laissez-faire capitalism, says Beyer, because he claims that Ryan has been using words like solidarity and subsidiarity out of the Catholic lexicon of social welfare and social good incorrectly, insufficiently.
Right. And that's been a critique that's come out from a number of quarters. Those words, though, subsidiarity and solidarity, are words that the Catholic right, especially in this country, uses to sort of gloss over or to justify a certain political stance. If you want to shrink government and you want to, as the bishops say, the Ryan budget would jeopardize tens of millions of people for the sake of rewarding the very, very wealthy with tax cuts and other kinds of incentives, you have to have some kind of cover. And the cover is, well, this stuff should all happen at the lowest level possible, which is
subsidiarity.
A real misuse of subsidiarity. And then the solidarity part, I really don't know how they work any of that out. There's another word that's become very, very popular in those circles, and that is prudential judgment. A couple of months ago, one of the bishops' committee, in the name of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, wrote a critique of the Ryan budget, saying it did not meet the criteria for a moral budget. A very strong critique. Some months later, one bishop, his home bishop, Robert C. Morlino of Madison, Wisconsin, and shortly after, another bishop, Thomas Paparocki of Illinois, both came out and said, well, those things, you know, there are certain elements like abortion and contraception that are non-negotiables. They're, you know, intrinsically evil. And, you know, the implication there is any approach politically to solving that problem, other than just outright condemning it and saying we have to do away with all the laws, are also intrinsically evil and anti-Catholic. But when it comes to poverty and war and budget, they're all prudential judgments. It's become a very Catholic kind of way to sort of fudge things, and it really has opened up a very quiet but very distinct debate and difference among bishops. The other thing I think it's done as a result is open up some very big room for Catholics here to sort of make their own prudential judgments about lots of things.
It seems that the Catholic laity in the United States has been very engaged in a way that Vatican Council II 50 years ago would be most delighted about, because I noticed, for example, that Joe Biden, very early on, he was getting in trouble for his stance on abortion, because he wouldn't draw the line and say, under no circumstances will I support any law that allows this. He was saying, well, given this and given that, you know, I'm not going to impose my view on others. And was even barred from communion, yet it seems that Catholics are swinging behind Obama in any case.
Yeah, the irony was the week Bishop Paparocki came out with his claim that any vote for a pro-choice candidate was tantamount to an endorsement of homicide, and the Catholics shouldn't vote that way, while not endorsing anyone, of course, he said. A poll came out saying that Obama is surging ahead among Catholic voters. The figures are interesting because back in June, he held a slight edge over Mitt Romney among Catholics, and the numbers were 49% to 47%. Since then, his numbers have gone to 54% to 39%. So Obama's surged to 54% of Catholic vote. A lot of that also is Hispanic. That's another interesting dynamic in this, because bishops are really trying to make inroads and keep Hispanics in the fold at the same time that the politics don't match up to their needs.
There was also a bit of a hiccup with President Obama's health care plan owing to the abortion and termination issue as well. Catholic bishops were opposing the universal health plan because it seemed to allow for the funding of terminations.
That was one of the claims that they made, and I think that it has been roundly demonstrated and established that that is not part of the law and never was. The sisters who looked into that and the Catholic Health Association concluded, no, it wasn't true. And they are the ones who really allowed the Catholic cover for legislators, Democratic legislators who were pro-life, to vote for the health care bill. What became an issue later was this mandate that all organizations except churches provide free contraception. And that became a sticking point. That's still point of contention. There was recently, this week, a court ruling saying that individuals could not opt out of that requirement claiming, you know, conscience, because there was a way to provide that with a third party where you wouldn't be violating anybody's conscience. So that's a matter that's still to be worked out, essentially a definition of religious institution.
It's also, I think, fascinating, though, that given the surveys on Catholics in the pews and their attitude to contraception, that political pragmatism would tell any politician that the majority of Catholics are going to accept the funding of contraception, no matter how much their bishops and conservative Catholics might criticize it.
Well, that's where it really got stuck. You know, if I can say, the Catholic moderate to left in this country were really behind the bishops when they were making the point that the definition of religious institution in the new mandates to enforce this law and to make it work were far too narrow. In other words, they narrowed the definition of religious institution from what had been the case in federal law and tax law for decades. Where it got into trouble was the bishops beginning to really make a case over the whole question of what it meant in terms of providing contraception. And then it became popularly known as the contraception debate. And yes, all of us people just said, well, no one observes this anyway. This is a rule that would help the bishops enforce something that Catholics don't obey anyway. There are so many political problems that the bishops have created for themselves in dealing with the administration of these kinds of issues. And part of it, and people have been writing about it, and academics are starting to write about it, this whole question of the big problem of authority among the bishops, because, you know, it's very evident that people aren't following them. People aren't following the recommendations. They aren't persuading anyone. They're just, you know, screaming, you can't do this. I mean, one bishop earlier this year compared Obama to Hitler and Stalin. I mean, it's just this over-the-top kind of language and approach to things. And it's not every bishop, but they're the ones who grab headlines, and that becomes the public story here for Catholicism. And I know that behind the scenes, there are more than a few bishops who are really steamed about that kind of characterization of them and Catholic teaching in the public realm, but they don't argue in public, so this stuff sort of stands.
Well, let's segue to another issue that some Catholics have taken exception to. That's the Monica Clark's piece on the reparative therapy law in California that Governor Jerry Brown has signed, which I think comes into effect January in the coming year, prohibiting any conversion attempt on the sexual orientation of minors, first time in America.
Yes.
But the California Catholic Conference and the Catholic Medical Association, among other groups, is opposing this.
Well, yeah, they're opposing it, and there are a number of groups in alignment with them, and we're talking about conservative evangelical groups who are going to challenge the law and take it to court and all the rest of it. I think that generally one of the reactions you would get here is, you know, that's California, sort of always on the cutting edge of these really odd issues. I mean, I think that other states, there are lots of people in official positions and in the medical community and certainly the psychiatry community who would say the conversion therapy is simply quackery and it can be dangerous and damaging to people and leave it there. California has just passed a bill, and Jerry Brown, who is a Catholic, educated by Jesuits, is signing it. So it's one of those who knows where it goes from here, but now it's on the books. California has done it, and often things spread east, these kinds of initiatives about things that most other people at the time aren't really thinking about.
Well, just to be clear, this law, as I understand it from reading, it actually bans psychiatrists and psychologists and any other mental health practitioner from engaging in any effort to change the sexual orientation of any patient under 18, regardless of that patient's willingness and regardless of the wishes of a parent or guardian. So the law absolutely prohibits medical practitioners from trying to get a child who says, I'm gay or transgender or lesbian, trying to help them become heterosexual.
Right, and this is prime for the courts. The psychiatric community, under the American Psychiatric Association, said that this therapy called reparative therapy poses a great risk, you know, including increasing the likelihood or severity of depression, anxiety, and self-destructive behavior for those undergoing therapy. There's a force of professional organizations in favor of the law, but the question is, can you actually pass a law that prohibits people from
running their own families, as it were.
Exactly, right.
Yeah. Well, lastly and not least, Jason Berry has been following the story on the Legionaries of Christ and broke the story, basically, Boston Globe. But he's run another story on the Legionaries of Christ. Just to put it in summary, Gabrielle Mee and her husband became very close to the Legionaries. They became involved in the organization. They kept giving major donations. And in the end, after her husband died, Gabrielle Mee actually gave the order $60 million, subsequently died herself, and then her niece came forward and said, look, they can't do that, and tried to sue the Legionaries to get some of the money back. But the judge said, sorry, the niece doesn't have legal standing to do this.
Yes, but he was also, in his 39-page ruling on this, as essentially a summary, it was very sympathetic toward the people who were bringing suit. He said, the transfer of millions of dollars worth of assets through will, trust, and gifts from a steadfastly spiritual elderly woman to her trusted but clandestinely dubious spiritual leaders raises a red flag to this court. He also said that he found the legionary priest in America unduly influenced and fraudulently induced Ms. Mee into giving approximately $60 million to the defendants, primarily the Legionaries of Christ.
This is Father Maciel.
The Legion of Christ, run by or founded by Father Marcel Maciel, who was very conservative. He brought in a lot of money. He brought in a lot of young priests, and he was an utter fraud.
He'd had children in secret. He'd been sexually improper with a number of people, and this had been effectively a mark of the order at the very top.
Yeah, and he was abusing his own seminarians. Nine former priests and seminarians came out 9 or 10 years ago and began pursuing the case against him. And they did that when Pope John Paul II, who really lavished favor and goodwill on Maciel and took him on trips with him and all the rest of it.
More unfolding still on the Legionaries of Christ, which is supposedly being reformed at the moment.
Well, reformed or just simply falling apart. The reality is that their founder was, in being discovered more and more, an utter fraud from the start, and I think they really don't know what to do with the out. They're losing priests, they're losing money, they're losing property and all the rest of it, so I don't know where it goes from here.
Tom Roberts, Editor-at-Large for the National Catholic Reporter from the United States. Thanks very much for being with us again.
Again, very much enjoyed it.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. You can download your favourite Sunday night interviews from our website at abc.net.au/Sunday Nights with an S. Thank you for listening.